Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm net control operator for this Weimar Technical Net. Weimar Technical Net has been going on for 39 plus years, Sunday night, 8 p.m., and this is just one edition. This particular one is our Columbus Day weekend edition, so I hope we have a good turnout and some good participation. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the use I like to keep people aware of. Okay. If you cannot reach me via the radio, and you want to reach me via email, that would be either to ask a question, we call those mailbag questions, or if you would like to mention a topic of interest that either you would like to discuss or discuss with the group here or here discuss, or if you have a puzzle. I have a puzzle that I'm for tonight, if time allows. So I'm always looking for interesting puzzles where, you know, we take on things that seem rather matter-of-fact and for granted, and we kind of ask why. And that sometimes adds to our font of knowledge. So please, if you have any technical type of puzzles, please email them to me. If you would like me to tap Paul, WS2N, on the shoulder, ask him to take a look at ACE or NASA-related YouTube or website or what have you, a story, I'll be glad to do it. So the email address to reach me, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag at my call sign, alphacharlie2gulfsierra.com. I have a link page of all kinds of interesting things, YouTube, some illustrations that will relate to Paul's SpaceNet report, and a list of science articles that I found interesting. So they're all links available, and available 24/7. Just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the link page. In addition, we have a chat room. Sometimes it's very active, sometimes it's very quiet. You can get there by either going to Limark's own website and following the link, or you can type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to our chat room. I stream audio of the technical net and pretty much everything that goes on at W2BL 24/7 most of the time. So all you have to do is type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and you'll have an audio link to even when you don't have a radio and you're not in radio listening areas. And I also want to remind people of my KC2NJI, amateurradio.tv website. It has archives of the technical nets going as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of those. Let me drop for a second and I'll tell you my plans for tonight. Okay. Plans are kind of usual. We're going to ask for any questions of a technical nature and ask people to give me first name and call sign. I'll write them down on a list and we'll take them from top to bottom as the night progresses. Fortunately, we're going to have a fun time at WB2ED. We'll be dropping in sometime after 9 p.m. To expand upon a previous discussion of aeronautical communications and especially coordinating locations and beacon such, which sounds like it's going to be fascinating. So that's going to happen after the 9 o'clock hour at some point. We will open the questions to general science and technology and even medicine, as long as we keep it general. We do not diagnose nor treat over a radio signal. There's that little puzzler. It's not anything too awe-inspiring. It doesn't give you the secrets of Earth, but I think some people will find it entertaining. So I have that puzzle in my back pocket, if the time allows. That should take us to about 10:15, in which Paul, WS2N, will give us the SpaceNet report until about 11 p.m. I'll return, put a bow on it all, wish you a happy and safe week, and we'll call it a night. So if the radio and the repeater and the universe allows, that's my plans for tonight. So I'll ask out there if anyone has any questions of a technical nature. Please give me your first name and your call sign.
WB2KWC. Good evening, Roy.
Good evening, Ken. Welcome aboard. I have your name down here. Anyone else?
Did I send you the location?
Okay, Wes, I have you down. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight?
Roy, did you get me by chance, KD2OGB?
No, somehow I missed you, Craig, but you're in the list now.
Thank you. And also, I'm happy to tell you, I know what my actual question is. I'm on my cell phone right now, and I'm going to be switching sources momentarily to my mobile.
Okay, very good. Well, you're number three on the runway, so I don't know how long that'll be, but it shouldn't be that much time. So anyone else want to put their name on the list before we start the process going?
Yeah, Roger, Roger, Roger. This is KD2QYW, JoJo in the mobile, Clarkson, New York.
Yes, Joe, do you have a question or are you just saying hello?
Hey, love you guys, love you guys. Just saying hello, saying hello.
Okay, very good, Joe. Glad to have you aboard. Let's start the show and we'll see what happens. Just because we start now doesn't mean we stop taking questions. We kind of always take questions. Sometimes I find myself taking questions even after I close the technical net. So Ken is up first. Ken, we missed you last week. We almost had a computer net of our own last week. There were a lot of computer-related conversations going on. But what's your question or topic tonight, Ken?
Okay. Evening, Roy. Thank you. Sorry I missed it. My question is about these silly little cell phone chargers. I've got an Android phone. My wife's got an iPhone. And when we charge them with a little charger rated at 1 amp, it takes forever and ever. And when we charge them with a charger rated at 2.1 or 2.4 amps or whatever their rating is, the charging is much faster. Okay, it's time we go out and get some of these little cubes we've either misplaced or given away or whatever, but we need some more. So I'd like to get the ones that obviously charge my phone a little bit faster. So I look around and at the specifications, and a lot of them, the specifications say 2.1 amps or 2.4 amps. The problem is they've got two ports on them, and the individual ports are not labeled. So I don't know if I've got one device plugged in, can that port draw 2 amps, or will it still only draw 1 amp? I'm wondering if you've got any speculation. AC2GS, WB2KWC.
Okay, Ken, it's an excellent question. I wish I had an excellent answer. It's kind of, the short form of the answer is, unfortunately, it depends. We've kind of talked about this before. There are an incredible number of different charging protocols depending upon whether you have a USB-A port or a USB-C port or a Lightning connector. It changes the different options that a power supply can offer to a given device. Of course, you need a power supply that is capable of managing more than 1 watt. 1 watt is kind of the old original standard for these chargers. Since then, I have a collection of 5 watt little power bricks and even 10 and 15 watt power bricks. And I think my most powerful is something like 20 watts. The trick with the 20 watts for me is it has to be plugged in using a USB Lightning connector in order to access the highest power rated charging protocols of that chipset. So unfortunately, without knowing, and none of us know what's in the chips inside our chargers, you can't really tell. It might simply be a parallel connection that will give you the lowest common charging mode of 1 watt, or it might be an intelligent circuit that can handshake with whatever is connected to it and either upgrade or downgrade the charging protocols. It's unfortunately one of those games of you've got to try it out before you know if it works. I wish there was a simple solution, because I'd use it myself. Yes, Wesley?
And there might be some silly reasons for it, but I'm in my areas, but I'm going to give you a few. The charger normally charge 50% slowly to save the battery capacity, about battery life. So that's one of the things. Then the USB port might be broken. Some of the wires may not work. And you can check if the charger or cable has no fault. Try to charge phone from any other charger off and check if your present charger and cable is working fine. But that's just by comparison. Try to remove unnecessary app from smartphone that drains the battery. Avoid using your phone while charging and try to keep a phone in airplane mode to making charging faster. Or this is simply switch off the phone during the night time if nobody calls. So you don't expect to have a phone calls. It's like taking the power to power the apps and the phone and then charging it. Let me go.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
I may be misconstruing a lot, but I don't think that is Ken's question. Ken's question, as I understood it, was that he wanted to know what the charging capacity of a charger that's listed as 2-point-something watts but has two ports in it, whether it's configured to give you 1 watt per port, or if you only plug in one device in one of the two ports and leave the other one empty, is it smart enough to go into a somewhat faster charging mode and use the 2 watts that the power unit is capable of? I think that's Ken's question, not really that he's not getting enough of a charge in his cell phone.
Thank you for correcting. Ordinary phones, these days use 5 volts, 2 amps, standard, at 1 amp. And older adapters have lower output. If we compare to the typical architecture of USB ports in our computer, then we know that there is a certain amount of power among all of the ports that is divided by number of ports. So I don't believe that small USB charger having two USB ports is able to intelligently to deliver the same wattage to each one of them. I never met one. And to exchange.
Okay, that might be the case. I have experienced all kinds of very strange combinations of chargers and devices to be charged. And although it's very common for them all to have the same USB connection, since they have different charging chips, some of the chargers are capable of negotiating different voltages sometimes, but certainly different current loads, depending upon how the handshake goes with the device. So newer devices that have that intelligence make that handshake and upgrade the power capacity if the underlying power supply is capable of supplying that. So they're growing increasingly much, much more intelligent. I mean, there are points now, there are some gallium nitride power supplies that have a USB-C connector on the end of them that you can plug into a relatively medium-powered laptop and charge the entire laptop. It's 12 volts. Charge the laptop using it if it's kind of designed for that significant amount of power. You've got to use something like gallium nitride or else they're rather enormous bricks and people aren't going to be just carrying them around for the hell of it. So the technology is advancing, and intelligent, inexpensive power handling chips are available, but not documented almost anywhere. So, like I said, it's a kind of Russian roulette. You may end up with a device that's capable of doing the proper handshake. You might not. It might. There are many times that I've bought power hubs where a couple of them were designed with specific chips to be able to handshake and apply a much higher charge. And then there was a row of them that were just generic 1 or 2 watt USB connections with no intelligence. So it's really up to the electrical engineer that's designing them, the chips that they put in, and how they configure the chip. Again, I wish it was simpler.
Let me see.
Question KD2O, GB Mobile.
Yes, Greg, you wanted to add something?
We're trying to figure out fast wireless charging here, or like you're plugging it into a hub that has like higher voltage to try to charge faster. Is that what we're talking about here?
Well, I brought up the generalization, but the specific question that Ken brought to us tonight is a relatively simpler one, that he has a charger that is rated for 2-point-something watts, but it has 2 ports in it. So he wanted to know what the chances are that each port by itself could deliver those entirely 2-point-something watts, or if it's designed so that each of them are just getting the very, very simple 1 watt of power, no matter whether one is plugged in or two are plugged in. So I think that's what Ken is really asking.
Oh, you're trying to hook them up in series, so that way you can kind of cheat your way through and get both of them to deliver at the same time. That's what he's trying to do.
Again, not necessarily. I think what he wants to know is because you could configure a power brick in any way that you wanted to. If you wanted to, you could configure it that no matter if you plug in one device or two devices, it's only going to give one of those devices 1 watt of current. It's current limited to 1 watt, whereas you can have a smart device that can judge that only one device is plugged into the bus. Therefore, let me give the entire current load capable of this power supply to the charging chip on the other side.
Okay, so it's similar to like hooking more than one device up, but a little bit different on Ken's side. So, okay, just wanted to add that in there. KD2O GB Mobile, exit 61 LIE.
Okay, very good. So unless someone else has any ideas on it, it's really a very random occurrence. It's really, really based on the chipset that they decide to use for any of these charging units. There are many around, and they're all different in numerous ways.
Interesting.
Yes, Leslie?
See, I kind of have a problem with your comment saying that, well, he was asking about something else. We're talking about the power of the powering device or the power supply. We're not talking about the current drawage of the phone. That's why I was listing the possible reasons why is charging slow. And I'm going to give you one more example. If let's say your phone is hot, I have in my car the air conditioning, and it happens that the phone holder is next to the outlet of the air conditioner in the car. It charges twice faster. And I have a Galaxy 10 telephone. There's no coincidence because I've checked it a few times. So, if you have apps constantly drawing power, and you try to power the phone, then you cannot really have a firm testing on it. Switch it on, put it on different power supply, and check which one works better, then find out what is the power given by each one of the power supplies. Just simple like that. Do you agree with that? And to actually...
Yes, I agree with you, but again, I don't think it's Ken's question. I think the point of the exercise is to attempt as best we can to answer Ken's question or anyone's question. His question was more related in the power handling capability charger in and of itself. And if the charger in toto is current rated for, say, 2.5 watts, but it has two ports, does that necessarily indicate that each of the ports are half of the current, or whether one, if you only connect it to one connector at a time, whether it can, whether it current limits each port to half of the total current that the power supply is rated for. Again, it's a different thing in my mind than what you're talking about. You're talking about how the cell phone itself charges, and that's a different question.
I understand. My understanding is that unless somebody wants to put voltmeter and altmeter at the output, between the outlet and the power supply and measure what kind of difference is when you put two loads instead of versus one load into the charger, you're going to see the difference, because load actually determines how much current is being drawn from the outlet. So you can do that, this kind of test, but you can do a very simple test. Take you a few different chargers, and everybody has, I assume, plenty of this stuff, and switch off the phone. This way you know that no app is affecting the charging, and check the charging time, and you know which one is good. Definitely by all reasons, if you have a 2 amps and you have a 2 ports, you're gonna be dividing the power of 1 watt per device. Unless there is a power brick that you can program to give to one device more of the current and to the others less, and to exchange.
Well, Wes, that's what I was saying, that all these things have very, very inexpensive. I mean, the Chinese produce hundreds of millions of them at this point. They're less than $1 a piece. They're charging circuits, and they're very clever. They know how to do all kinds of ridiculous things. So it is not unusual to have a charging chip that is capable of current limiting or a selective non-current limiting. So it's not that difficult to have a piece of silicon that's able to sense, well, there's current going through port A, there's no current going through port B. Should I limit a port A to half of what it could be or not? No, I'll give it all she's got. So again, it's really up to what the chipset is in charger, and in addition, after the fact, what kind of chipset is in the device, because the more they're kind of mated to each other with the same protocols, the more optimum the power transfer. Because there are vanilla charging chips that can't handshake with the charger, and they'll give them the lowest common denominator.
And the another reason could be very much simple, a broken USB port. If the cable connector and the USB port are not in proper contact with each other, then it might lead to slow charging of your Android phone battery over time. The charger is being changed to heat because of the improper contact. And to exchange.
AC2PL.
KC2R1. Yes, Jeff first, then David. So Jeff, you go first.
Hey, good evening, Roy and Wes. I know Wes doesn't want to hear this, but obviously it's empirical. It's very easy to do so empirically. You just take one of these very cheap volt and ammeters that they sell that plug directly in line, and you can measure the current out. And some of them have two ports on them. You can measure the current for one port and then the cumulative current. And I do that all the time. I just plug it into whatever USB brick I have, mostly to see when the thing is almost completely charged. But these things are so cheap that you can throw away the ones that are noisy or that don't charge fast enough. I haven't done it with a two-port bricks to see if you can get 2 amps out. I've never seen really more than 1 amp coming out of one of these things into one particular device. Go ahead.
Okay, very good, Jeff. I happen to be holding such a device in my hand as we speak. They're very, very useful. At least I find them useful, and they're very, very, relatively speaking, cheap. So I was just testing a USB connection that was flaky just today with it, so I have it on hand. Theoretically, for people who don't want to invest a big $8 for something like this, although I think hams is one of those toys that pretty much all of us should sort of have someplace. As Wesley mentioned a little earlier ago, you just plug it in and charge it up, and you figure out if it charges up for the same amount of time as the 1 watt do, then you have your answer, that it's a current limited per port of 1 watt. But it ain't necessarily so. Again, it sort of depends upon chipset. So it is within the realm of possibilities that there exist chargers out there that are smart enough to make that decision and not current limit when only one of two ports is occupied and drawing current.
Roger, and I knew you'd have one of those sitting there, so I thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah, indeed. That's the quick and easy way of doing it. It takes a little time to figure out whether the charge changes. My guess would be, my gut feeling is that it probably is current limited and not that smart. But some of these things can surprise you. A lot of these things are, sometimes they're a little too smart for their own good. So thanks, Jeff, for that insight. David, you wanted to make a comment on this subject.
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, Wes. Good evening, everybody. I think the answer to this question is it depends on the charger and the equipment that you're using. I have a 30,000 milliamp hour solar charger, and I don't use it for solar. I plug in to get the charge, and it has two USB-A ports. One of them is 2.1 ampere, and the other is 1.1 ampere, according to the diagram that they sent to me. And I called Apple and asked them, do you recommend charging an iPhone with one of the chargers, from eBay? And they said, we don't recommend it. You take your chances. Go ahead.
Well, I could understand their response on numerous different levels. Number one, you're safer with something that you know better about, rather some anonymous seller in some other country. You have a major American company that backs their product. That's one level. Number two is they don't make a profit if you buy it from someone else. They make a very nice profit if you buy it from them. I got a wireless charger that Apple sells, and on their website they say that this is the only place you can get this Belkin charger. They were charging $49.95, which I thought was a little weird for a wireless charger, so I went to Amazon and I found the same exact model for half the price. So that's another good reason probably why Apple would suggest that you buy only Apple-branded or co-branded products. But, there is a legitimate thing that some poorly designed chargers can have negative effects. So you could, there are some chargers out there that will blow out any piece of electronics because they're so awfully designed.
QSL. Well, I charge my walkie-talkie batteries in the cradle. I have a BTEC charger and a charger. Is there any way to know whether this charger would be okay with the iPhone?
Again, unfortunately, the only thing is experimental evidence. I can't perceive of any simple way of you figuring it out. Companies do not bother to tell you what chipsets they use. You know, if you're really aggressive and you pop the top and you're able to see what the chips are, you'll have a better understanding of the circuits. And, you know, people have disassembled such things. There's a lot of YouTubes available. They're very entertaining. And they demonstrate that some products are made from hell. Very dangerous, very poorly designed, and yet there are others that are very well designed. So it depends upon manufacturer, depends upon the designer, and other aspects. So you're always taking some degree of a chance with a no-brand product. I don't necessarily think you have to go with Apple. I certainly didn't. I went with Belkin. It's a very well-known secondary brand. They don't have the markup that Apple has. So if you keep with a well-known brand name, I don't think you get into any kind of a trouble personally. But some kind of brand you never heard of that just came out of China last Wednesday, you are taking a degree of a chance.
QSL, thank you very much, Roy.
Okay, this is AC2GS. Once again, anyone with any other comments, I think, you know, it kind of turned back on itself, and David made the comment that ultimately the answer that I said at the very beginning is it depends. But if anyone has any other comments, please feel free. Okay, I think everyone had their say. Ken, did you glean anything from this interesting debate?
Yes, I've gleaned a lot. The standard thing that you know, engineers tend to overcomplicate things. Fortunately, Lou NY2H has given me a link to a possible device that I'm looking at. I thank everyone for their education, and hopefully I will get this done. AC2GS, thank you, right? WB2KWC.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I see it. He gave it to you in the chat room. It's a two-port. How they're shrinking over time. I've mentioned repeatedly, gallium nitride shrinks them even more. So the wall warts are going to get tinier and tinier, and they're going to just kind of fold themselves, I guess, into the actual receptacle itself. So I wish you luck if you go that way, Ken. And you know, if you do and you want to, feel free to come back and tell us if this device charges particularly faster than your previous charger.
Okay, I will do that. Looks like Lou's got the ones I want to buy.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Ken, for participating tonight. Next question, probably not an amateur radio question, but, you know, we only have three questions, so we can do that. Wes, you wanted to discuss a recent study that you sent me a link for last month suggesting an elevation in future of autoimmune disorders for people who were hospitalized with COVID-19.
Actually, I have two subjects. One is cell phone related, but let me talk about COVID. So the information spread out yesterday, but it was only available today. So Stanford researchers, they found people who have COVID-19, some of them land in a hospital, some of them not, and in 60% of the cases, it's not end of the story. You get out of the hospital, you think you're done with that, but then your body creates autoantibodies. That's how they call it. In other words, those autoantibodies fight with your antibodies instead of fighting COVID virus. And then that can happen a week later, but sometimes a few months later. And the end of the material that I saw in video form says that it is good to get vaccination because it is actually sort of preventing build up of the autoantibodies. And you, as a doctor, I would love to hear your opinion in this area.
Okay, Wesley, by the way, this is AC2G. The study that you sent me is dated September 14th of this year. So the study is not from yesterday. You might be alluding to the YouTube, but the study itself is about a little bit less than a month old. That's not quite what autoantibodies are. Autoantibodies are not antibodies. I could understand why you would think so. They're not antibodies to other antibodies. They're autoimmune antibodies. They're antibodies produced in your body that attack parts of your own body. Red blood cells, all kinds of interesting cells. You can have an autoimmune disorder where your body has an overactive function of producing detrimental antibodies that attack your own body as an invader. So that's what they mean by autoantibodies. The things that promote autoimmune disorders that have been progressively getting more and more serious. You have a whole bunch of SLE, MS. This is a whole rheumatoid arthritis is one of the earliest autoimmune disorders that will recognized as that. So, let me drop for a second. I don't want to time out. So, it's a preliminary study. You know, it's an interesting study. I think it requires further investigation. It is not that incredible, so I don't inherently doubt it, but I would like them to continue reviewing and expanding the research. It's one of many ways. Unfortunately, severe cases of COVID-19 that require hospitalization cause a great deal of damage, even with the revived it. I know people who have severe respiratory disorders now that they didn't have before, and it's suggested that long-term effects with infection of this virus can produce cardiovascular problems, renal problems, gastrointestinal problems, all kinds of things that we may not be as aware of right now as we will be as the years progress and more people who had been infected earlier come down with stranger and stranger things that we are not used to or in numbers we're not used to. So I wouldn't be surprised. It's still kind of open to more research. Anything that would kind of suggest to people, please get vaccinated, I would stand behind. It is a no-brainer. We have been incredibly fortunate in the new technology that we use, though it's been in research for 20 years, that has been so incredibly effective. And I think anyone who can get vaccinated who doesn't, has some other problem, non-health related. I don't know. So I certainly would agree with the suggestion of the paper that people should be vaccinated. You don't want to die, and you don't even want to come close to death, because even the survived hospitalization are probably going to have a rocky road in front of them for many, many years to come. Yes, David.
Hello again, Roy. I have a question about the booster shot. I don't know if this is exactly related to what you're discussing. Please let me know.
Well, it's not directly related, but it's a close parallel, so I think you can ask the question.
My doctor's office said that they're giving boosters at the end or beginning of next year, beginning of next year, they say that the only boosters that they have are Pfizer, and I took the Moderna. They don't have any boosters for Moderna. Maybe they're just not available yet. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Okay, well, the reason I think that the Pfizer booster, is no different than the previous two shots. What they did was they were the first ones to go to the FDA and get their product approved, and so it's being sold under that FDA approval. I do not think Moderna has quite yet gotten an FDA approval to use as a booster, and that might be delaying the rollout of the product. So I don't think that this is going to be a long-term problem. My understanding is that the period of time between your last of your two shots of the Moderna and your booster is longer than for Pfizer. It's an additional 2-3 months. So there's certainly a lot of wiggle room to allow for them to roll out the Moderna. And I think by that time, there'll be Moderna available. There'll probably will also be Johnson & Johnson. They, too, have to get approval by the FDA. As far as I'm aware, could be wrong, Pfizer's the only people legitimately got it approved, and then they started to push through the request for the FDA to suggest that everyone get a booster, which they turned down, and instead advise people over 65 and with chronic high-risk illnesses to get a booster, and then that was approved by the CDC.
November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Yes, Zulu Charlie.
Yes, good evening, good evening. Just two quick questions on this fascinating subject. What are your feelings about, from what I understand, as a layman, this is the first time an RNA vaccine is flipped. That seems to scare a lot of people because there's a lot of information talking about how it's unknown and when it was used in experiments, things went afoul. And again, I have no knowledge. I'm not making an opinion on it. I'm just saying there's a lot of information out there. I'd like to hear your opinion on that. And the other thing that's frustrating, I think, to everyone, is we hear a lot of contrary information, and I remember Fauci originally said that herd immunity will kick in when we're at about 70%, and places like New York City are well above that, and we still have not had this herd immunity effect. Do you have any input on that?
Okay, you asked two questions, so let me do the first one first, and the second one second. Messenger RNA vaccination is a relatively new technology, which is not to say that it was figured out an hour and a half ago. As I mentioned, there have been research going on for 20 years on this particular technology, and they did toy around with it and experiment and make vaccines for experimental purposes that for one reason or another never was required for large-scale production and given to the public, because those infections thankfully burnt out by themselves. We have been very lucky. Not all of the vaccines, by the way, work on messenger RNA. The two major ones that most of us know about, the Pfizer and the Moderna, work with messenger RNA. Johnson & Johnson does not use messenger RNA. It uses an adenovirus as its carrier for the antigens and such. But it has never really demonstrated any high risk. It has worked beautifully the last year that it was given. I got the shot. I don't know if you got the shot. A lot of people got the shot. And we're all alive. So most of the stuff that I hear about messenger RNA worries make no particular sense and kind of came out of the head of people with no understanding. They talk about changing your genetics. Messenger RNA is not your genetics. Your genetics is DNA, not RNA, and certainly not messenger RNA. And then some people, a little smarter, kind of say, well, what if you got a retrovirus infection? And maybe the retrovirus will grab the messenger RNA and recode it into your genes. Well, that's kind of somewhat science fiction. So it has demonstrated, if it was high risk, you would have heard a heck of a lot of stories of people suffering terribly from it, and you don't. It has been incredibly beneficial and almost miraculously useful. This technology is most likely going to be turned for other things like malaria and other infectious processes. And some people are thinking in terms of using the technology as an anti-cancer immunological tool. So it's been very beneficial. So let me drop for a second and I'll take number two. Okay, number two is that Dr. Fauci's opinions change over time. That's not because he's stupid. It's not because he's ill-informed. It's not because there's some cabal of people manipulating him. It's because this is a novel virus. We even call it a novel virus. It's new. We don't know its characteristics. We make assumptions based upon other COVID type of coronaviruses, but they're just assumptions and they're subject to change. We don't know what the percentage of coronavirus imposes herd immunity. 70% was an approximation that someone came up with based pretty much on nothing that I am aware of. You would have to actually do a large-scale study and see what percentage produced a herd immunity. So although 70% was mentioned at one point or another, a lot of other things were mentioned. And so it's not like Fauci is coming down from the mountain with some stone tablets. Science is a process of modification and adjustment based on reality. You have a theory, you have a similar situation that you're trying to fit with this one, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And you have to be able to change your opinions as the facts warrant.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. As always, excellent.
No, thank you very much. It is very much educational. I have another thing.
Okay. What's your other thing, Wesley?
In August 21, 2021, 23 million of T-Mobile customers have been affected by the cyber security attack. And me too. And that would be it. There are two class action lawsuits were filed against Wireless Carlos whatsoever. But then interesting thing happened. The TF are selling the information to plenty of other abusers, making more money on it. And how it works. You are on the internet and your phone is next to you. Your phone is password protected, so nobody can get into your phone. But let's say you have a Wi-Fi on your phone enabled for the telephone call. So if you are near the Wi-Fi network, you can make a free of charge telephone call. Ladies and gentlemen. While you're cruising on the internet, somebody calls you. You may answer the phone, may not answer the phone. I decided to not answer the phone. I didn't know the number. But then, like a few minutes later, there is another phone call from different number. So I say, hey, let me check if somebody left a message. Usually my phone is 20 seconds delay before it goes to the password protection. But it was at that time that I was hanging out with a friend, and we were watching some YouTube videos and discussing that kind of thing. I changed it to 5 minutes. And to exchange. So then, when the phone calls, somebody is calling you and you are on your network, and you put your password to check if somebody leaves a message or whatever,
Now your phone is no longer protected by the password. Now your phone becomes, and it's easy. You take your USB cable that you're using for charging your cell phone and plug it into the computer USB. And now from your computer you can log into your phone because it's password enabled. So I have a monitor that I can see the activity on the internet, and immediately I saw the two high peaks in blue, which says the outgoing data, and they try to check my phone, and all of my pictures were gone. So I had the copies of the customer checks, I had my personal pictures, I had some movies. Everything that was in that folder is gone. This isn't 2XG. So the reason I'm telling that story is that now we would say, okay, the 53 million of affected at that time, August 21st, is just a story. It's just a past. But now you could become a victim of an attack. And whoever it is, whoever is the origin of those hackers, and what they do is, they are actually preying on your personal information. I don't have email on my phone, so they cannot get to it, but actually, if you have a long enough time for the phone before it goes to dark and it becomes password protected back, then you are actually a candidate for somebody to attack you. Enter XGA.
WB2KW3?
Yes, Gav.
Okay, Wesley, I think you have entirely too much confidence in your password locking your phone. Basically, all that password does is it locks the user interface. No one can type on your phone. However, it does not suppress any of the internal activity. You can get at your phone if you're connected to a network. You can get over the internet. If you're not connected to a network, you're still connected to the cellular network. There are many flaws in the what's called SS7, Signaling System 7, which essentially controls your cellular data. There are flaws in that people can attack you through. The fact that your phone is locked or unlocked is completely irrelevant.
I do very much thank you for that information. I was mentioning two scenarios. My phone is never connected to the computer to be charged. I have a charger, a separate charger, and it's not connected to the network. So that option, that direct connection to my phone may expose information on my phone, was excluded. Although I agree with you completely, 100%, we're talking that there are certain ways of somebody attacking your phone. And in my particular situation, knowing that I'm T-Mobile client, that's what happened. I have a monitor that is monitoring the data. So I see how much is outgoing, so how much is incoming to my network. If somebody calls, means somebody based on stolen data knows your name, your telephone number, and calls you. And once you are point your code to talk to the person or to check the information on the phone, now your phone is exposed this way. So yes, there are many, many ways you can die. You can go across the street and you might be lucky, but we're talking about elimination of possible ways. In my particular situation, data was stolen because somebody who's from those 53 million affected guys, that somebody who stole that data or who had access to the personal data called my personal number. And they knew that I'm there because I was on the computer. But I saw definitely those two very high peak, blue peaks on the monitor saying that an incredible amount of data was coming from my network. So if you have more information how to avoid problems with somebody stealing your data, I would appreciate to do so.
Okay, I do have a way to avoid it, but essentially it's keep your phone disconnected from every network, which essentially means it's no longer a device to do anything other than examine the data on the phone. Once you're connected to a network, you've got to do the best to keep yourself protected. Obviously no side-loading applications from unknown stores other than the official, either your telecommunications company or Apple or Google or possibly Samsung. But these certainly are the challenges because your device is connected to a network.
Since that happened, what I do is my Wi-Fi is always off on the phone, and my Bluetooth is always off on the phone. And I've changed the time frame for the phone to be password enabled to approximately 15 seconds. And to exit.
Okay. As far as the screen lock, again, as far as I'm concerned, that is irrelevant. All that does is it locks the screen. No one can look at what's on your phone. No one can type something in from your phone. But network-based attacks, somebody that comes at you either through the internet, or if your internet is off, since you've turned off your Wi-Fi and assume you have no directly connected connections, you're also connected to another network, essentially the phone network. You need to be connected to that network to make and receive phone calls, and you are not connected to Wi-Fi. You can still get on the internet through cellular data if you've enabled that.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul?
I wonder if you could temporarily shut everything off by going on by going to airplane mode and shutting that off. Ken, would that work?
Yes. I think both airplane mode and cellular data. I'm not sure if airplane mode shuts off your cellular data, but basically those things would keep you disconnected from the network for both attacks on yourself and also for receiving phone calls, emails, and text messages.
Okay, that's good to know. You know, you go to a mall or something, and you're walking through this, you're going from one Wi-Fi to another sometimes. That's a scenario. I would just, if you could just shut it off, and like you said, data and airplane mode, good to know. Thanks, Ken.
And I'm not completely positive if airplane mode may also shut off cellular data. I just am not 100% sure.
KD2FIU, operating systems are you talking about again?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It looks like never charge your phone from your computer because you are connected to the computer and computer has is connected to the network. Always keep at home your Wi-Fi off and your Bluetooth off, and use
even if you are disconnected from local network, somebody, you still have a cellular network there. And if somebody calls and you don't know the number, and you happen to be T-Mobile customer, it's likely it happened to me. Somebody knew my information, my telephone number, and they knew that I'm on the internet, on my computer, so they called me because they knew that I'm in local network, just for me to look at that twice. And I didn't react first time, but the second time I wanted to find out if somebody left a message. And there was enough for them to steal my personal data. And so all of the photographs, all of the short videos that I have made, all of the copies of the checks, all of the personal information that I had in pictures is gone. So I assume all of the leads of my clients or all of the leads of the people that I have stored numbers is gone too.
KD2FRU, can I input here, please?
Yeah, sure, George.
My experience has been there's a big difference between iOS and Android systems. Android systems will permit you to absolutely shut off the cell phone's mobile data. Aside from Ken was saying, Ken brought this in that this is what flagged me. We're not using the phone at this point as a mobile hotspot or anything like that, but the Android systems will actually let you shut off mobile data. In addition to that, they will let you shut off data usage with features that don't allow any apps that you permit to work with, that will override your cell shut off of the cell phone data. iOS doesn't let you do that. iOS always runs data.
Mozul, KD2R1.
Roy, I don't know if I got all that through, KD2FIU.
Yes, you got it all through. Let me just see if I'm there. Yeah, you got it all through, George. My 2 cents worth is, unfortunately, we sort of live in a wild, wild west. Don't expect privacy anymore. It's a thing of the past if it ever existed. Anything that I write in an email or send anywhere, I assume that it is, if someone posted it on the library bulletin board, I would not be called by the police. So you just have to live your life knowing that far too many people know far too much about us. Yes, can you repeat your call sign? There's a lot of noise in your background.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Oh, Rich, yeah. What would you like to say on the subject, Rich?
Well, I'm pretty sure that airplane noise, airplane mode, what it does is it blocks both transmitting ability and receiving ability, totally. Doesn't matter whether it's Wi-Fi or data. It blocks any ability to transmit and receive. I have a question. I'm not on the list, but I am now. I have a question. TPM. So, Roy, when you get through with the list, if you could come back to me, I'd appreciate it.
T2OGB comment.
Yes, Greg.
Actually, that's false. What airplane mode does is it blocks the following features, with some of them you can turn back on. The full block, calling, messaging, mobile data, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth. However, if you turn on airplane mode with Wi-Fi on, it'll shut off Wi-Fi, but you actually can turn on Wi-Fi while in airplane mode. You can't turn on data in airplane, only Wi-Fi.
Okay. I mean, personally, I don't understand, except for obsessive compulsiveness, why it would disable reception, per se, because I can't imagine how reception would interfere with the electronics of a plane. not to mention that the transmission probably wouldn't either. But I realize that that's just the binary black and white aspect of law enforcement.
KD2FRU?
Yes, George.
I quite didn't understand what just came in, that you can turn on Wi-Fi on an airplane when you're in airplane mode, because if you do have Wi-Fi on, you're still transmitting. And the concept of being in airplane mode is to not transmit anything. That includes your phone being pinged in order for it to be recognized by the networks that it is capable of being online. Whether or not you're using it, when you go into airplane mode, you are not being able to be pinged at all. So I don't see how you can have Wi-Fi mode turned on when you're on an airplane while you're in airplane mode.
Okay, it's Craig's idea, and I haven't researched it, that some phones' idea of airplane mode will turn off Wi-Fi, but in a curious manner, a bug, a feature set, what have you, if you enable Wi-Fi, it allows you to enable Wi-Fi, and it still labels it as airplane mode, which is a little on the confusing side and probably not something that the FAA would like.
Yeah, that being that the concept of airplane mode is that you are not able to transmit.
Yes, well, but sometimes reality is not what the concept is, unfortunately.
WB2KW6.
So are voluntarily doing it or not? It's the network also recognizing your device. Your device is transmitting with the recognition signaling going on.
Okay, Ken wanted to say something?
KG2R1.
Okay, thank you, Roy. The important thing, and I think it was mentioned, is the order that you do things in. If you turn on airplane mode, poof, Wi-Fi goes off, poof, Bluetooth goes off. However, once they're both off, you can individually turn them back on again, even though airplane mode is selected. And I'm only speaking from experience about Samsung phones. I'm not sure what Apple does in that case.
I think it does the same thing, but yes, it turns off Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and mobile data. The only thing you can turn back on, and actually I was half right, the only two things you can have on an airplane are Wi-Fi and GPS. You can't have mobile data on while an airplane. It won't let you.
KD2FIU.
Yeah, George?
Mike?
The concept of airplane mode is that your phone is transmitting nothing, including the fact that it cannot be recognized by a network. For it to be recognized by any network, it has got to be able to transmit a signal that is pinged. That's why the phone has got a system called, or a feature called, airplane mode. You transmit nothing. And you could utilize your device to play whatever you want internally. And that's the concept. Now, if they're shortcutting this, they are fooling the FCC.
Well, I think it's FDA, the FAA and the FCC. David, you wanted to make a comment?
KD2WOT.
Odd question. One is, can somebody hack your phone when you're charging it through the AC outlet? And the other question I have is, I had this phone called a Sonim XT5, military grade phone, and it had a operating system, self-proprietary operating system that wasn't Chrome, it wasn't Android, and it wasn't Apple. What are the advantages for such a thing as it relates to being spied on or hacked or bothered by some other entity?
You ask, I'll do the second one first. A A little used operating system can be more secure, depending upon the way it's written, because if less people have it, there's less tendency for people to spend a lot of labor trying to break it. Now, if it's a poorly designed and poorly written one, you might be able to break it in 3 seconds, and so it's all moot. But all things being equal, a relatively equally lower operating system that's used by 1,000 people versus used by 1,000,000 people, the 1,000,000 people are going to find cracking tools to break the more used operating system. So that's your second question. First question is, plugging it into a alternating current does not give it another point of egress. You can still hack it through the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and cell network, all the transmitters and receivers on your cell phone. What Wesley was mentioning is if you charge it by plugging it into your computer, you are now adding the network connection of your computer to another egress to be assaulted in attacking the data on your cell phone.
So you're saying that if you have 5G service, it's even going to make it easier for people to hack your phone?
No, the 5G, I was thinking that you were talking more about Android and iOS. Those are operating systems. 5G is protocol for cell towers, frequency ranges. 5G has much wider breadth in frequencies into the high microwaves going as high as 50 gigahertz. That will not, in my opinion, introduce anything plus or minus into the equation. I don't think people have the ability to really manipulate microwave that well, and I don't think it really adds anything to the insecurity.
Thank you, Roy.
You're welcome, David. Chris, KD2WOT, you wanted to say something?
Yes, first of all, good evening to everyone on the net. I just wanted to make a comment. I recall being on an aircraft a couple of years ago when we were traveling and actually using my Wi-Fi to access the Wi-Fi on the airplane. They offered Wi-Fi.
Yeah, well, I mean, times have changed, and I'm sure, did they charge it?
In that case, I believe it was complimentary in first class, and, in the other classes, you had to pay for it.
Okay, that's reasonable, but you pay a lot in first class to begin with. I really think that the whole concept of airplane mode for the sake of the electronics in the airplane was excessive caution, pretty much unwarranted, so I'm not surprised to hear that they offer it. And probably as time goes on, it'll be a lot freer. We have always been a cautious race of mankind. Way back when electricity was first introduced and factories were electrified, people were actually paid hazard fees, not to operate the electrical equipment, but just to be in the same factory as electrical equipment. So people are wary of new things a lot of times, and in the case of radioactivity, not wary enough of them. But good to know, Chris.
Back in my day, KD2FYU.
The prohibition the prohibition was that it couldn't be done below 10,000 feet. You had to wait till they got up above 10,000 feet, and then then you were able to do it.
Easy.
Yes, Rich.
First of all, I've been calling a couple of times. Can you hear me okay, Roy?
Yes, I hear you now. Unfortunately, sometimes if you're using the Selvin repeater, we talked about that, it kind of blanks out the link sometimes, so I'm not able to hear probably everything that's transmitted on Selvin.
Okay, well, I totally agree with you. They were overly paranoid about people using cell phones on planes early on because they thought that there was a possibility of them interfering with the instrumentation and communication in the cockpit.
but as time went on, they found out that that's not true, and that's why they introduced Wi-Fi, and I think airplane mode in the future will go away completely when the last vestiges of paranoia go away. I have a question on this subject. May I ask it now?
It's related to this subject we're talking about now?
No, it's related to upgrading to Windows 11.
Okay, well, we have Craig before you, and I don't want to kind of push him to the side, and plus, Ed might be waiting in the wings to do a little presentation. Are you tight with your time tonight? Can you wait a little bit for it?
Oh, boy, I can wait until you quiet down.
Ed, there's a little bit of noise in the background. You said you could wait until later?
In front, and I'll look up to the Federal Antenna.
Okie doke. So Rich, first let me just check back with Wesley, make sure we've kind of kicked this horse, and then it's Craig, and then it's you, Rich, okay?
QSL.
Very good. So Wesley, have we kicked this horse enough? Unfortunately, we live in dangerous times. There's a lot of people out there spending a lot of energy to violate privacy of everyone all over the place. They're dumping, I'm sure you're not a fan of this product called Twitch. It's a streaming service for gamers and other people. It was attacked. Their servers were kind of had a data dump. They published how much money they give a lot of people, which annoyed a lot of other people. So, you know, it's just the world we live in today. You try as best you can to limit your exposure. The problem is the more you limit your exposure, the more you limit the things that you can do with all this equipment. By linking them all together, you are able to make life a little bit easier. But at the price of waving a flag and getting noticed by some black-hatted hackers. So I think this is going to go on for the foreseeable future, unfortunately.
I do thank you very much, Dr. Roy, for a chance to discuss this subject with the audience. Yes, you're right. No, I'm not not a gamer at all. I actually enjoy science, so science is my entertainment. That is what I do on a computer. But it is unfortunate that somebody targeted me because of that of that what happened a month ago, or 3 weeks ago. So everybody could be targeted, unless you are not T-Mobile customer. Maybe the 53 millions of clients were only the clients of T-Mobile. I'm not sure if T-Mobile owes Sprint or other networks. I'm not sure about it. Thank you very much, and have a good night.
Welcome, Wesley. Always a pleasure. Thank you for participating. I want to give Frank, WB2 BXO, who's on Echolink, a chance to get in. He typed some stuff, and perhaps he would like to tell it to the rest of you guys. So let the repeater be quiet for a couple of seconds and give him a chance on Echolink if he's interested in doing that.
Yeah, very good. I think you actually did a good job of explaining the situation. Admittedly, I have not flown since the pandemic, but the last couple of times I flew, let me identify, first of all, WB2BXO, even though I'm holding the phone, I realize I'm going out over the air. Anyway, so I found that, whatchamacallit, they were, in fact, allowing you to turn on Wi-Fi in airplane mode, which did work on my phone. The free version was kind of slow and did not allow streaming, etc., but it did sort of work. So I know they're less paranoid now, though they're still not allowing you to just plain use the cell phone, which probably would not make a bit of a difference. But I think part of that is a business decision. I could be wrong on this. Somebody in the industry may tell me I'm wrong. But it seems to me that, okay, they figured out how to make money by surcharging Wi-Fi on the higher level of Wi-Fi on the airplane. But they haven't figured out how to make money by allowing you to use the cell phone service on the airplane. And once they figure out how to do that, they'll probably tell the FCC and FAA, you know, we investigated and there really isn't an interference problem. Maybe I'm overly cynical, but I think that's the way it's going to work. Go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, I'm equally cynical. I think ultimately, if you follow the dollars, you'll find out a lot more about human nature than any other place to look.
PC?
Yeah, Rich, you want to make a comment? But keep in mind that Frank is stuck on Echolink, so anytime anyone keys down, he's silent. So make it quick.
I'll make it quick. They also don't want 200 people talking to their aunts and sister-in-laws on the plane. That would be quite disturbing.
I don't know. If they get a piece of the action, they might turn the other way. I don't know. So, Frank, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I understand that problem. Somehow, psychologically, people find the person next to them having a cell phone conversation more annoying than the person next to them talking to the person in the window seat, let's say. I think that's partly psychological. That can be resolved. Just create a phoning and no phoning section, just like Amtrak does and New Jersey Transit does, and just sort of like the old smoking and no smoking section. So I think once they decide they can make money from the issue, you know, that they'll come up with some version of that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent idea. I think the only thing necessary is for the greed of the company to be able to realize a significant profit. Then, you know, safety issues can be tweaked and adjusted. You know, it's just that's the nature of business.
No, I wouldn't want to listen to a mother telling Bobby that he has to study more algebra for 20 minutes sitting right next to me. That would drive me crazy.
Okay, I could understand that entirely, but I could also see the executive boardroom of an airplane company where someone presents that if they offer this feature, they could probably generate profits of $100 billion a year, saying, no, we don't want to upset our customers. I don't think they mind if they upset their customers these days.
Could be, but this one is particularly annoying. I just can't stand listening to somebody else's conversation, and I move away if somebody is talking on their cell phone and I could hear every word. I move away from that person because I just don't want to hear it. I'm not interested, and it bothers me tremendously. And I think on this issue, would overwhelm the airlines to a point where they might have to reconsider if they do it, especially with 200 people on a plane.
Okay, I mean, Frank had a good idea of a babble versus a non-babble portion of the airplane, where, you know, people who want to talk to themselves or talk on the phone can babble endlessly, and the other people, you know, behind some kind of a sound-absorbing curtain can be a little bit quieter. Anyway, this isn't the business school. I just want any closing comments from Frank before we move on to Craig, because I think it's time to move on to a different question.
it's worth, I went to business school back in the dark ages. I don't think I learned much, but that's another story. That probably has more to do with me than the business school. But anyway, I get what you're saying. Okay, 7-3. I'm probably going to shut down for a couple of minutes and come back for the space section. WB2BXO.
Okay,